This is Talk of the Nation. I'm John Idstey in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. In the wake of the September 11th terrorist attacks, Congress passed the USA Patriot Act. At the time, President Bush said it was necessary to protect the country during a time of war.
This bill met with an overwhelming agreement in Congress because it upholds and respects the civil liberties guaranteed by our Constitution. This legislation is essential not only to pursuing and punishing terrorists, but also preventing more atrocities in the hands of the evil ones. This government will enforce this law with all the urgency of a nation at war.
President Bush talking about the Patriot Act at the time it passed into law about 6 weeks after the 9/11 attacks. There's always been controversy surrounding the Patriot Act. Critics say it infringes on people's civil liberties, allowing the government to eavesdrop on phone calls, intercept emails, and monitor what people are buying from bookstores and borrowing from libraries. But the sense of national crisis immediately following September 11th muted some of the concern. In the past 18 months, however, as the sense of crisis has eased, more and more people are speaking out against the Patriot Act. Today, at least 89 cities have passed resolutions condemning the Patriot Act. What are your thoughts on the Patriot Act? Are you less willing now to sacrifice civil liberties in the name of fighting terrorism? We'd especially like to hear from you if the Patriot Act has affected your life. Are you a librarian or a bookstore owner, or are you responsible for keeping your company's information confidential? Do you work for a state or federal law enforcement agency? Give us a call. The number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also send us an email at totn@npr.org. Joining us now is David Meserve. He's a member of the Arcata, California City Council. Arcata is the first city in the country to pass an ordinance outlawing voluntary compliance with the Patriot Act. Mr. Meserve drafted that ordinance. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much, John.
Why did you take the action that you did?
Well, back in January, we were one of the cities that passed a resolution against the Patriot Act. And working with some other folks, we figured that it would be a good idea to take one step further and actually, put the power of law behind it and make an ordinance. And in that ordinance, what we do is, first of all, say that the city will not engage in any sort of profiling or illegal detentions, and then go on to say that our management employees should not cooperate in any way with federal officials enforcing the Patriot Act if that is unconstitutional or contrary to the Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of practical effects, have you been asked to participate in any way in enforcing the Patriot Act?
The ordinance will not actually go into effect until May 2nd. Interestingly enough, one federal official did show up at City Hall the other day wanting information on somebody from water department bills. He was referred to the city manager, and the city council will probably review that request. We think they may have just been fishing, though.
Mm-hmm. Where is Arcata, and how many people live there?
There's 16,000 people, about 5,000 to 6,000 of whom are students at Humboldt State University. And we're about 250 miles north of San Francisco.
How would you describe the town?
It's a progressive town. It's definitely a college town, but also has strong roots in both the timber and the fishing industries.
Mm-hmm. How much public discussion of the ordinance was there before it was passed by the city council?
Well, we had there were three city council meetings at which people were invited to make comments, and we also had a town hall meeting.
Mm-hmm. And what legal effect does the ordinance actually have? As we all know, federal law trumps state law and local law, so can you expect that you're going to prevail on this ordinance in a battle with the federal government?
Well, we're not sure if we'll prevail, but we certainly do want to stand up to them. We like to think that this is a bit reminiscent of the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798, where Jefferson and Madison passed the Kentucky and the Virginia resolutions, respectively, basically saying that it was the duty and the right of the states to stand up against any federal laws which impinged on civil liberties and civil rights, as outlined in the Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm. And what do you hope happens now? Are you hoping for a legal challenge from the federal government?
You know, I can't speak for the rest of the council, of course. Personally, I think that it would be a good thing because so far my understanding is that groups like the American Civil Liberties Union have been having trouble finding cases that will proceed into the courts because most of the victims so far of the Patriot Act have not been citizens. They've been people of Middle Eastern origin who were rounded up, as you know, after 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much for speaking with us this afternoon.
Okay. Well, thank you for the opportunity because, you know, we just feel that, I mean, my pledge of office, my oath of office was to uphold the Constitution, and that's what we're trying to do here in Arcata.
All right. David Meserve is a city councilor in Arcata, California. That city is the first in the country to pass an ordinance outlawing voluntary compliance with the Patriot Act. And joining us here in Studio 3A is Orrin Kerr, an associate professor of law at George Washington University here in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the program.
Pleasure to be here.
Professor, refresh our memories. What exactly is the Patriot Act all about? What are its key provisions?
Well, the Patriot Act is a law that was passed about 6 weeks after 9/11. It's basically a modified version of the Justice Department's anti-terrorism proposal, which DOJ came out with about a week after 9/11. It contains 10 titles, ranging from surveillance law to wiretapping, money laundering, immigration. It's literally hundreds of provisions. The text of the law is about 300 pages long. And it's primarily modifications to pre-existing laws. So, for example, there are amendments to existing laws. The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act is one particularly controversial area. Rather than brand new statutes enacted in whole, it's primarily amendments, but some of those amendments are proving pretty controversial.
Mm-hmm. There is a section called 215 that's among the most controversial, I believe.
That's right. That's proving to be the most controversial significantly so far.
What does it do?
This is a provision that gives terrorist investigators, specifically in the FBI, an authority which is akin to the traditional authority that criminal prosecutors have had, known as a subpoena power. This is a very broad authority which allows the government to compel third parties to disclose information. Could in theory be used, for example, at a library or at a bookstore, more likely in the context, for example, of a bank getting bank records. And this is a traditional authority that prosecutors have long had, but this is the first time that it's been introduced in the foreign intelligence context. This law, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which is a very secretive law. Most of the proceedings are secret, so we don't know a lot about it, which is one of the reasons why people are particularly concerned.
Mm-hmm. And as you said, it applies to librarians, library records, and that sort of thing. Is it really being widely used in that way? Are federal law enforcement officials going to librarians and saying, we want information on such and so and what they read?
It's a great question. It turns out the law, Section 215, is addressed generally to access to information stored with third parties. It doesn't single out libraries or bookstores at all. These are groups that are particularly concerned. Librarian associations are particularly concerned. As of yet, we don't actually know if the law has been used in this context. So DOJ, for example, last summer, in response to questions by the House Judiciary Committee, suggested that while it was conceivable that the powers would be used to get library information, to get bookstore information, it was actually unlikely. So we don't know if the law is being used in that way.
Mm-hmm. Do we know whether the law is being used at all? Are there cases that we know of where the law has been applied? It's being widely used?
Well, what's difficult about this area is that the foreign intelligence surveillance powers are classified in terms of what's actually being done. So we in the public can't quite tell what the government is up to. And that's actually the cause of a lot of the fear. Although it's part and parcel of this law. This is by nature. It's a spy-catching, terrorist-catching type of law. So it's difficult for us to know exactly what's being done. In other areas, we actually have more information. Some of the changes to the Patriot Act, for example, were actually in the criminal surveillance laws, where it appears that the laws are being relied upon in some areas significantly, in other areas not so significantly.
Well, let's get some comment on the Patriot Act from listeners. Let's go first to Paul in Springfield, Georgia. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
Hi. You're on the air, Paul.
Hey, thank you. What I'm hearing from all this is that these people, the American citizens, want to be protected, but they're also saying that I don't want Big Brother breathing down my neck when I'm taking my dog out for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what he said before about these people may not know a whole lot about it, and that therefore scares them a little bit. I think he's probably right in saying that, because, you know, if there's a new law that comes on the books or is introduced and you don't know a whole lot about it, and you think, well, you know, he's going to look at all my tax statements from years and years on back and the books I've checked out, and, you know, kind of get a little apocalyptic or freaked out a little bit, you know, that could be normal.
Yeah. Well, what about you? Are you concerned about it now that you know more about it?
No, not really. I mean, if the government has to go through my garbage can in order to keep me and my neighbors safe, then by all means, I'll make copies of everything I throw away and I'll send it in with my tax records on April 15th.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just don't really have anything to hide, and I think that maybe the government should, or President Bush should get on the air and say, hey, you know, I understand that you people are concerned about this, but let me explain it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to do certain things in order to keep you safe. You know, search your records, library, telephone calls, and I think then everything will go a lot smoother.
Now, Professor Kerr, the Founding Fathers might be appalled by that opinion among Americans that the government ought to take a look at everything that that we do.
Well, I think the Founding Fathers would be quite surprised at the scope of the federal government, period. Whether, in fact, these provisions of the Patriot Act are really going so much further than pre-existing law is not all that clear. The Patriot Act as a whole, I think, is significantly more modest than most people fear. It is, as I said earlier, primarily consisting of amendments to pre-existing laws. Many of the changes do, in fact, expand powers, but the differences might be slight. So, for example, the law might change the threshold of when surveillance can occur slightly from one standard to another, or might allow a greater number of predicate offenses, sort of situations when the law could be used. So by and large, this is clearly an expansion of government authority, but it's not clear that it's actually so significant an expansion. And when put in context with 9/11, some of the things the government might have done, it's a more moderate piece of legislation than many would have
mm-hmm.
expected.
Thanks, Paul. We have time for another quick question from Jesse in Marblehead, Massachusetts. Hello, Jesse.
Yes. My concern, I was 20 years in the Navy, and I spent that time basically defending the Constitution of my country. And I feel a little bit cheated or offended by this, because it's the small steps that are scary, because nobody bothers about the small steps. Because you take a whole bunch of small steps, people will accept it by taking one big step. And I feel any kind of erosion of civil liberties is uncalled for.
Mm-hmm. Professor,
I'll take comments off the air.
Mm-hmm. Professor Kerr, what do you think of that? You're saying this isn't that big a change from previous law, but what about the incremental steps here? I mean, is that something for people to worry about?
It is something to worry about. In particular, it's something to worry about because we had the first Patriot Act in October of 2001. Now there are bills under consideration. There's sort of language floating about that may be a Patriot Act 2. And it turns out that really when we look at these different laws, in particular in light of the changing technology, we're constantly going to be amending these areas of law. This is a work in progress, sort of no matter which way we look at it. So that means we have to keep watching what the government's up to and look to whether the invasions of privacy are significant, mm-hmm. and if they are, if they're justified.
We're talking about the Patriot Act. When we come back from a short break, we'll check in on the national effort to organize against it. Call us at 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. I'm John Itzty. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm John Idstey in Washington. We're talking about the Patriot Act and why more and more communities are passing resolutions protesting it. Where do you draw the line between what civil liberties and national security? Call us at 800-989-8255. You can send us an email at totn@npr.org. Our guest here in Studio 3A is Orrin Kerr, an associate professor at George Washington University. And joining us now on the line from Northampton, Massachusetts, is Nancy Talanian, director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. Welcome.
Thank you. Hello, John.
Hi. Your group, the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, is spearheading a nationwide campaign against the Patriot Act. What exactly are you doing?
Well, we passed a resolution in Northampton, Massachusetts, back in May of 2001 because we were concerned about the threats to civil liberties, worked with neighboring communities, and then we put together the information that we'd gathered and information on how to do a resolution on a website and invited others to use it, and they're using it.
Mm-hmm. How many cities and towns have passed resolutions so far?
So far, there have been 91 resolutions and one ordinance in Arcata, California, and also two states are currently working on resolutions.
The states are working on it. No state has yet passed.
That's right.
What is your biggest concern about the Patriot Act?
Incremental changes to rights, both to immigrants and to people who dissent from the government policies. Mm-hmm. It puts a chill on domestic dissent, and it also frightens and actually imprisons people from other countries who happen to be from certain racial or ethnic backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. Is it your sense that reaction against the Patriot Act is growing?
Yes. Our movement has grown very rapidly in the last 6 months. And there are efforts afoot in hundreds of communities in 40 states and the District of Columbia right now.
Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things is to see that the concern sort of crosses the political spectrum.
That's correct. This is and should be something that is totally nonpartisan. It's been nonpartisan in the communities that have passed resolutions. Every American should be concerned about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And quite a few of them are.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us the names of some of the organizations that might be backing this, that people might recognize from the conservative or the liberal side of the spectrum? You don't have those on the tip of your tongue.
Not quite.
You know, resolutions don't carry legal weight, of course. So, is this really only a symbolic gesture?
Well, not entirely. You are right that resolutions are not as strong as ordinances and bylaws, which are actual laws, but a city council or a town council can instruct its own employees and can institute a policy whereby the police and others in the city are not to engage in racial and ethnic profiling in order to determine who should be questioned. Detentions without charges and without trials are not something that they necessarily have to be told to do. Of course, if the FBI wants to come in and do those things, they can't stop them, but they can draw the line on having their own employees spy on local people.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go to our listeners and get some of their comments. Nancy in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Northampton, Massachusetts.
I'm sorry. This is Ramsey in Worcester, Massachusetts. There
yes.
We go. Let me apologize. No wonder you didn't know I was speaking with
That's
you.
That's all right. Well, I'm here now. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
My question actually concerns a new subpoena powers, or not subpoena powers, search powers granted by the Patriot Act. It's my understanding from reading the document and some of the related legislation that now judges can, in secret, issue warrants against organizations rather than individuals. So, for example, if the underwater basket weavers are determined to be a threat to national security and you wish to monitor anyone who is suspected of membership, you simply get a warrant to to conduct surveillance against all members of one organization,
mm-hmm.
and that this can be done, and the this warrant would never be made public. You would never know the reason for it, and that to me is the item of greatest concern if it is in fact true.
Mm-hmm. George Washington University law professor Orrin Curry is with us here in the studio. What about that? Can you issue subpoenas that involve a whole organization as opposed to an individual?
Fortunately, that's not true. There are two different authorities by which the government can obtain evidence in an investigation. One would be the traditional criminal authority, and that means either issuing subpoenas or getting search warrants based on probable cause, based on evidence of criminal activity. The other type of surveillance would be under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. That requires typically a warrant showing that there is probable cause to believe that the target of the investigation is an agent of a foreign power. That agent of a foreign power might include an agent of a terrorist group, for example, Al-Qaeda, but you can't simply get surveillance of an entire group. Similarly, there's a bit of misunderstanding, I think, on the secret provisions. There have been, since about the 1980s, courts have allowed the government to obtain what are known as sneak and peek delayed notice warrants. And that is a type of search warrant where the government can actually delay notice that the warrant was executed for a few days, maybe a week, maybe two. The government has had that power for about 20 years, and the Patriot Act slightly expanded and clarified that power. So it's slightly broader than it was before, although it's actually not really a new authority. It's a modification to a pre-existing authority.
All right.
Excellent. I put somewhat at ease. Thank you.
And let's go to Andy in Indianapolis.
Thanks for taking my call. I guess just to put this back in historical perspective, I think everybody knows that the Constitution has been under attack essentially, since the ink was wet, and the Alien Acts or Lincoln's suspension of habeas corpus were pretty obvious examples of embarrassment that not only didn't work, but were fairly quickly removed. One of the things that I think people should remember is that these resolutions aren't necessarily so weak after all. You know, the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions that were drafted by Madison and Jefferson were really just an affirmation of the Constitution as a contract and telling the government, to keep your part of the contract and we'll keep ours. And, the strength of those resolutions is really far greater than we mostly think because, laws are just words, and reaffirming the actual law of the land, the rule of law, the Constitution, that should be considered a very, very strong action. And it has been very effective in the past. And I guess what worries me about all of this stuff is, I guess as sort of a disclaimer, I am a Republican and I'm a Reformed Presbyterian, which puts me pretty far to the right. I think that Rush Limbaugh is a commie. But in that kind of context, this stuff worries me.
Hmm.
And that we should be thinking that that government is what's limited by the Constitution and not citizens. And then you think of how, just one last comment. I know I'm going to ramble on if you let me, but the passengers of Flight 93 actually showed us that liberty has been our strength and not our weakness. And the government that failed us, really, in releasing its bonds and taking off its limits, is doing us no service because we have been the strength of this nation.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Andy.
Thanks.
Professor Kerr, any comment? Would you agree?
Well, certainly distrust of the government is one of the great traditions of American life, and we all, of course, need to keep an eye out for what the government is up to. At the same time, we can't let fears over what the government might be up to really get out of control. I think we need to try, to the extent we can, to look carefully at what the laws are that are being proposed, that are being enacted, and constantly ask the government, is this step justified? And I think here we can criticize the government, in particular the Justice Department, for being more secretive than I think they need to be. They are not disclosing information, which I think they very readily could disclose. They're taking a very aggressive approach towards the war on terrorism, which probably is a decent idea. At least there are arguments to say that that's not a bad idea. Knock on wood, we've seen no terrorist attacks in the U.S. since 9/11. But at the same time, they can be more open. They can address some of the fears that people have. And I think we'll all be better off if mm-hmm. they do.
Nancy Delaney, and just quickly, don't you think, though, that the government needs some of these powers? Don't we need greater protection after 9/11?
Well, we certainly need to have people who are using evidence better, I believe. And one of the problems, I think, with September 11th was that there was too much information already in the system. So gathering information by making every single person in the country a potential suspect is not really necessarily the answer to that problem. I think, as the professor has implied, the government has not been exactly open, and so people's fears are multiplying because mm-hmm. they have no idea how this information is being used or what information there has been about us.
Well, thanks for speaking with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Nancy Talanian is director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. She spoke to us from her office in Northampton, Massachusetts. And joining us now from Tampa, Florida, is Douglas Kamek, dean of the Catholic University Law School here in Washington. Welcome, Professor Kamek.
Good to be with you.
What is your view of the Patriot Act?
Well, I think
is it a good law?
I think on balance, I concur with Professor Kerr from George Washington that this is a necessary measure in light of the times, and by and large, it was not a wholesale grant of expansive authority out of context, but rather fairly careful calibrations of existing authority. Let's remember some of the things it did. It recognized that terrorist activity was being fostered by modern technology, email, voicemail, cell phones. And basically, a good portion of the Patriot Act is merely designed to update law enforcement capacity so that you don't have to get individual warrants on individual phone lines, but you can, in fact, match law enforcement authority with the ability to communicate nationwide without being at a fixed point. So some of it was a technological update, which would have been necessary to fight crime generally and is certainly necessary to counteract terrorism. A good portion of it, as Professor Kerr has already explained, is allowing a greater interplay between law enforcement information and foreign intelligence information and the two communities. That was controversial, but I think necessary. Necessary because, quite frankly, the interests of our country at the moment is not just to prosecute crime, but to prevent terrorist activity, and the measures that allow the greater sharing of information gathered through foreign intelligence with the law enforcement community and vice versa, I think are well warranted.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, two very important points. I think everybody should always be vigilant about their rights under the Constitution, and it's good that we have a vigilant press and that we have an active debate between Congress and the President on exactly these topics. And the way that surfaced in the Patriot Act was an express provision that said anytime this act is used to deny someone their First Amendment rights, that's going to be a basis of a civil rights cause of action. We're going to have a Congress that is regularly informed by reports from the executive branch, reports that are going to go to the judiciary and the intelligence committees, and that when authority was granted with regard to subpoena power and the like, it is always granted by and large under some form of judicial supervision, perhaps not the same level of judicial supervision with normal probable cause, but judicial supervision nonetheless.
Professor, we're going to have to take a quick break here. Just stay with us, please. We'll be back to talk more about the Patriot Act with Professor Kamek and Professor Kerr, and we'll take your calls just a moment. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Professor Kamek, does the Patriot Act, in your view, go too far anywhere? Does it cross the line and infringe on civil liberties in order to protect the nation? Should we back off in any regard with this law?
Well, I actually think that the abuses have probably occurred outside of the Patriot Act or the things that concern me. I'll give you one example.
Mm-hmm.
A good number of people who have become a part of terrorist investigations are being held around the country as material witnesses. This is pre-existing law, not really embellished by the Patriot Act, but in fact being used very aggressively to hold people for extended periods of time, again under judicial supervision, but I'm not always convinced that the supervision has been particularly well applied in given instances. I think within the Patriot Act itself, probably the most controversial portion was the ability to hold a non-citizen for up to 7 days without a criminal charge. As a constitutional matter, there's some doubt as to the sufficiency of that. Aliens are treated differently under our law, not completely so. They're certainly not invisible to the Constitution. But I think that is a controversial question.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a couple more calls. This is Scott in Helen, Georgia. Hello, Scott.
Hello, how are you, sir?
Fine. You have a question or a comment?
Yes, sir. One of the things I have that has bothered me, which I've noticed, is not so much the Patriot Act, which I do have a problem with, is the response of Americans to it and their willingness to put their physical safety so quickly above the liberties that are provided us, and yet our willingness to send troops overseas to give their lives to protect the liberties of others. And I would just like some dialogue on at what point does our physical safety, should we as Americans in our country be willing to put ourselves at a certain amount of risk to protect our liberties? As you can see in other countries, Israel and different places like that, where on a daily basis they face terrorists and they're putting their lives at risk, but they're going on about their life and they're living their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And we seem ready to sort of give up a piece of our life for something that's more physical versus a philosophical right that we have.
That's an interesting contradiction. What do you think, Professor Kamek?
I don't accept the premise. I mean, mm-hmm. I look around and I see people are traveling from state to state quite freely. I don't see freedom of speech curtailed. I see the press. I see individuals both having this discussion and other discussions robustly criticizing the Patriot Act. I see Arcata, California, as you indicated, on this country, on this program, passing a resolution saying that it will not be commandeered to enforce the federal legislation. And all of this is happening within a country that rightly enjoys its freedom. I think the Patriot Act hasn't curtailed any of that.
Mm-hmm. Quickly, is there something you wouldn't give up in the interest of national security? Just very quickly.
Well, I think, yes, of course. I think we've had times in our country where we have punished people for criticizing the government, and we've held them in contempt for doing so. The Alien and Sedition Acts, which were mentioned before. We've punished people for speaking out against mm-hmm. the draft at various times in our history. That would be a serious encroachment against First Amendment speech liberties and personal freedoms.
We've got to go. Thank you very much, Douglas Kamek, Dean of Catholic University Law School, and Oren Kerr, an associate professor at George Washington University. Coming up after our break, Nina Simone. I'm John Idsty. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.